been running unlike Christian McCaffrey. Here on the nightcap, that is Sean King, Super Bowl champion, Tulane Green Wave great. I am Tim Murray, 7-6, early third quarter. Panthers leading the Texans. Sweating a little bit.
A lot, not a little bit.
You took the entire game. I just need them to basically, well, I need them to win by 2 points. They're winning by one right now. I have them in a two-leg teaser. You took them out right here. And Christian McCaffrey out for the game with a hamstring injury. And we're going to dive into that in just a moment. But let's just get you, let's just set the stage. Because Conan O'Brien used to always joke when he opened his show that, you know, he'd laugh and say, we have a great show tonight. You know, some shows aren't that great, but tonight's a great show.
Right.
Tonight is a great show.
All right.
There's a gentleman joining us in less than 15 minutes. I mean, I had to work hard to get him. Hall of Famer, Warren Sapp.
Yeah.
Going to join the program. What are we going to talk to
Big 99
about?
A little football.
Yeah, a little football.
Out in L.A., see what's going on in L.A.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So your former teammate, a Super Bowl champ, a gentleman who owns a nice jacket and a bust in Canton, Ohio. He will join us.
Of the gold color.
He will join us in just a little bit. The Bear, Chris Felica, who will be there in Chicago, as will I, later on this weekend from College Game Day. He will join us later on in this hour, get his thoughts on the college football slate. And then the Ryder Cup starts tomorrow, and our good friend Steve Sands is going to join the show in the second hour. So we got a lot going on.
We do.
A lot going on.
But that's what they expect on a nightcap, so we're just delivering.
Well, and I'm just saying, you know, turn the volume down on Panthers, Texans. Look, you know, I like Joe Buck. I like Troy Aikman. They're good, but come on.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. They're not us.
Plus, it's bad football that's being presented tonight.
Exactly. Look, we're not going to put out Warren Sapp and Chris Felica on a day that, you know, the Buccaneers are playing the Cowboys. It's the Texans and Panthers.
I think the NFL set the bar too high.
They did.
I mean, we got that tremendous opening Thursday night game, and it's just kind of sliding down the wrong way on the hill since.
I mean, think about Monday night, the first Monday night game.
No, just talking about
Vegas
the Thursday day, the standalone Thursday game.
I mean, even last Thursday, we said it wasn't the prettiest. It was competitive.
All right.
Giants and Washington.
Yeah, that was bad football, too.
This is worse. And
this is sort of like the same thing. It's just one team has more expectations than the Panthers.
Yeah, so 2-0 Carolina, they went off as 8.5-point favorites in some spots. And right now on the live line, folks, it is 3.5 in favor of the Carolina Panthers. And the big news, and if you're a prop bet player, if you're a fantasy owner of Christian McCaffrey,
yeesh.
And that is, I mean, he is, and you talked about what he is as a talent. And we all know, but you even know a little bit more, having that internship with the Panthers, seeing him up close and personal. I mean, what he brings to the table, and to see him go out again with an injury, you hope for the best, but you fear for the worst, because what worries me, Sean, is that they ruled him out quickly. It was out, hamstring, and that makes me worried.
Yeah. You just hope it's not a severe hamstring strain. You know, the funny thing with those injuries is the only thing that heals them is time. I mean, you can do all the proper treatments and maybe facilitate it healing slightly faster, but until it's healed, it's not. So it's unfortunate, especially considering last year, you know, he suffered a season-ending injury. I know how hard he worked to get back, but hey, it's the game of football. Now, Chuba Hubbard, who they drafted, he has to step up and fill those shoes. That's just how this league works.
What have you made so far of the play of Davis Mills? Davis Mills making his first career start. And right now, you know, he led the Texans down the field at the end of the first half, got that late score. They missed the extra point. Right now, Davis Mills, 12 of 16, 99 yards, been sacked a couple times. One touchdown pass, that touchdown pass coming to Anthony Miller. A couple big plays to Brandon Cooks, who has actually quietly been having a pretty solid season down there in Houston. But we had a lot of questions. You weren't expecting all that much from Davis Mills. Has he exceeded your expectations, kind of met your expectations? What have you seen so far?
Well, I think Carolina let him off the hook. I mean, Carolina had a chance to put this game away in the first quarter, and they didn't take advantage of it.
Went for it on fourth and one.
And all of a sudden, now it's 7-0, and they have the ball with 3 minutes left in the first half, and a couple blown coverages later, and it's touchdown Houston. So I think he's done a good job of maintaining composure. I think he's done a good job of identifying when Carolina has just completely busted coverages. Like on the goal line, they have three people covering the flat. No one's covering Anthony Miller, who's wide open in the end zone. You're in two-minute defense. You're playing cover two. The corner gives up the corner route behind him, trying to be too aggressive on the short flat route throw. So rookie mistakes that Carolina defense has made. They've had, I want to say, seems like 116 penalties so far in the game. I mean, guys, can the defensive line get lined up? So I know Matt Rhule is going to be extremely frustrated
and
upset.
Seven penalties already.
You know, because these are unforced errors as well. You know, these are penalties that they're just doing by not being having attention to detail. And listen, success is one of the hardest things in life to handle. So here you have a team that hasn't had a lot of recency when it comes to the success aspect of playing this game. They have it. Obviously, it doesn't seem like they were as dialed in and locked in as they had been before. Sam Darnold, all of a sudden, looks like a guy that's going to turn the ball over a lot. You know, holding the ball too long in the pocket, a couple fumbles that Houston almost recovered that could have, you know, Carolina trailing. So it'll be interesting. Can they go ahead and finish the game strong? But they played a sloppy game of football.
7-6 right now. We just had a break in the action down there at NRG Stadium. J.C. Horn was out and hurt on the play. So, man, you talk about the Panthers and you're losing. You already lost Christian McCaffrey. Hopefully this isn't a serious situation with J.C. Horn, who is on the sidelines right now. And we'll see if Houston, they're going to try to take some shots here deep down the field. Right now at this moment, Carolina minus 3.5 at DraftKings on the live line. And if you like the Texans, plus 200 on the money line. So those odds are going to change. We're watching the replay of J.C. Horn and what happened on that one. Looks like is he grabbing his ankle? I don't know. Not putting any weight on his right ankle.
He knew immediately
ankle.
That something was wrong, so that's not good.
That's not good. Immediately, he pointed down to his ankle. It looks like in a ton of pain. No weight on that right ankle. And, you know, for a team that, when we did our overreactions, you felt like this Carolina team, the way that they played weeks one and two with dudes all over the field, they had an opportunity to do something. And look, you know, we'll see how severe Christian McCaffrey's injuries is.
They still have the same talent that had me bullish on them, and I think this is a learning experience. If they can figure out how to get back on the plane with a victory, because right now I think that's 50-50, but they'll learn from this game. Like, this is a tough league. I remember we sat here, and ad nauseum, I said the Houston Texans are more talented and a better football team than people think. And I think you're seeing that tonight. Like, they have good players.
They're getting after it defensively.
Yeah, they are. They're playing hard, you know. Testament to Coach Cullen and what he's been able to do since he got there. He came with not a lot of fanfare, not a lot of people even knew who he was. But it seems like, you know, he's not bad as a head coach because he has a group overachieving. And that's something special considering that Tyrod Taylor was not available.
7-6 right now. Texans going to punt this ball away. They are on the in Panthers territory, just kind of in that no man's land situation. Fourth and four right
now. You think
you
checked to make sure it's fourth down? There's a penalty.
I think they're going to push it back a little bit, give their punter a little bit more room to move there. You know, it's funny, our good friend Brad Evans, the prop king, he has just been crushing it. Props to him, no pun intended, how the season has been going. And his favorite prop play for this particular game was Davis Mills under 34.5 yards.
Longest completion.
For his longest completion. Yeah. And right before the half, me and Aaron Oster, our producer, are sitting here. And he fires one to Brandon Cooks, and there's no one around him, but it was late in the half, and he grabs it, gets out of bounds, 32 yards. So he's sweating that one out, but right now, still good to go. That longest reception is still intact. It was actually 30 yards, so that was the longest reception. But yeah, right now, if you played any of the prop bets, you know, once again, it's unfortunate, you know, more so when you think about the health of him and you want him to be back on the field. But if you played any Christian McCaffrey props, you lost. 7 carries, 31 yards, had 2 receptions, 9 yards.
I know he was high on Mark Ingram, over 9.5 carries. How many carries does Ingram
4.
Have? 4. Okay.
Yeah. Philip Lindsay's actually gotten 7 carries for all of 5 yards. Yeah. So this has been, if you played the under, this has been a dead under game. You're looking at right now, Sean, on the live line, a 30 and a half total.
43 or something before the game?
The NFL, you know, everyone's got to be on Thursday Night Football, and this is what you get sometimes. You get the early season games, the NFL Network only, and this is what you get. So, you know, last week it was Washington and the Giants, a little sloppy, but competitive, comes down to that field goal, some points. Not so much, but, you know, for our sake, now I have the Panthers starting a teaser at -1.5. Going to the Browns at -1. You laid the 8 with the Carolina Panthers, so we need a touchdown here.
We do.
To get at least to that push, that extra point maybe looming large. Real quickly, before we hit a break and welcome in Warren Sapp, Hall of Famer.
9-9, QB killer.
Just want to let people know that Marshall is up 30-21, a 7-point dogs.
Early.
Took them early in the week, 7.5.
Calm down, don't jinx it.
Don Jackson, I like where we are.
Right.
Warren Sapp, Hall of Famer, Sean King's former teammate, Super Bowl winner, one of the all-time greats. He's going to join us next right here on the Nightcap. It is the Nightcap here on VSiN, 7-6. Panthers leading the Texans. J.C. Horn being carted to the locker room. Not ideal. But it hasn't been. It's been kind of a boring night of football. And that's why we say, you know what, need to turn on the Nightcap. And I just need to toss it over to my partner, Sean King, to bring on a very special guest.
Absolutely. The most talented and disruptive defensive player that I've ever played with or against. Got 13 years in the National Football League, 7 Pro Bowls, 4 times named first team All-Pro, delivered the Tampa Bay Buccaneers their first Super Bowl championship. In 2013, he was inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame. The best player I've ever played with. Welcome to the show, formerly known as the QB Killer, Warren Sapp.
Hey, what up there, King? What's good, baby?
What's going on, big dog?
Hey, man, I'm out in L.A. right now waiting for my Buccaneers to get to town and light up the scoreboard.
So how are you loving being able to watch Thursday Night Football? It's almost in the fourth quarter, and it's only 7 p.m.
You know what, dog? The whole thing about beautiful about L.A., when you get finished with football, you still got the rest of the night. You can do this on Monday night. You can do this on Sunday night. I mean, you're Thursday night. I mean, it's just a beautiful thing the way you can just watch football and still have a whole evening to go enjoy yourself.
Well, Sal, let's get right into it, because you said you're in L.A., the Bucs and the Rams. When the season started, everybody thought that these two teams were on a collision course to see who's going to represent the NFC in this year's Super Bowl. Both undefeated. Rams actually a slight home dog at their home field. Tell me about your evaluation so far of both teams coming into this game.
Well, you got to love what the Rams are doing when they went out and got Matthew Stafford. So now Sean McVay can be as innovative as he wants to with that offensive scheme. And we know what they possess on the other side of the ball. Two nines like Warren Sapp. That boy Aaron Donald is a handful and a nightmare every Sunday or any time he lines up. So, you know, the Bucs got to be on their game, keep Tom Brady protected. And if we protect him, we'll be fine.
Question. Tampa. A lot of money invested on that defensive front. Through two games, teams have attempted 94 passes, yet that front has only had 2 sacks. Is it lack of effort? Is it scheme? Is it just bad luck? What's Tampa's reason for not being able to get a more consistent pass rush through the first two games?
I have no idea, and I would like them to solve it very fast, because I don't like no quarterback coming into Raymond James being as clean as the last two quarterbacks that have been there has been. And you're talking about Matt Ryan and Dak Prescott. And we talking about if we're going to leave this boy clean in SoFi, it's going to be a nightmare on the back end, because they have some weapons. And if you give this man time, we are going to be in a track meet. And I ain't seen a lot of, you know, 12-cylinder V8s or V8s or 12-cylinders in Tampa. There's a lot of 6-cylinders and 4-cylinders back there. Hey, man, we don't want to get in no foot race with these boys. No doubt about that. We got to rest the pass.
Chatting with Warren Sapp, Sean King's former teammate, Super Bowl champ, Hall of Famer. And, you know, Warren, you mentioned number 99, who will be lining up against the Buccaneers. And last weekend, he went up against Quentin Nelson and said, you know what, I don't really like this. I'm just going to go to the other side of the field, and I'm going to go wreak havoc on Carson Wentz. So, you know, if you're Byron Leftwich, what are you doing all week to try to figure out a way to not have Aaron Donald just completely disrupt what you want to do offensively?
You got to limit the one-on-one opportunities that he gets in the football game. No one man's going to have him one-on-one. I mean, it's not going to happen. And you got to be on time. You got to get the ball out of your hand. And we got one of the greatest men that's ever been a play caller or trigger puller in the National Football League. Tom understands what's going on. And we got to get that screen game going. We get that screen game going because the Rams are the first team I've ever seen four guys run to the quarterback and don't even think about playing screen.
Sapp, you're one of only 12 defensive players in NFL history to make a Pro Bowl, be named Defensive Player of the Year, and win a Super Bowl. So looking at the Defensive Player of the Year race, I know there were some names that jumped out coming into the year. Based on what you've seen so far, I know it's early. Who do you think is the front runner currently, and who's kind of your dark horse candidate that's going to pick up steam?
Well, the front runner is Aaron Donald. I mean, when you're talking about the most disruptive defensive tackle in the game and the amount of chances he's going to get with that offense that he has on the other side, the way they're scoring points and going up and down the field, he's my number one choice. But right now, the early horse for me is Chandler Jones. Oh, my goodness. Mm. But Chandler did in that football game against the Titans, every defensive lineman should sit down and watch it. And my dog horse is Max Crosby. If Max Crosby continue to hunt that quarterback like he has the first 2 weeks of the season, King, we're going to be looking at a 19-20 sack season from that young man. And if Max is around those numbers, no one can deny him Defensive Player of the Year.
If football don't work, Max could be a weightlifter, bigger bodybuilder lifter, because, I mean, he is built the right way now. He get off the plane, they like, whoa, homie.
One of the wild wrestlers we see up there, because, you know, he got, boy, that boy is something, oh, he's special. So, long, mean, mobile, hostile, I love it.
So move to the nation's capital for a second, because this was a defense coming into the year. Everybody talked about the Washington football team and Chase Young and Sweat and those guys. And through 2 weeks, they haven't been nearly as dominant. What do they need to do to get that fixed?
You know what? Whenever you have young players and you put a lot of expectations on them, all of a sudden it becomes an individual thing. And I've learned this from, you know, my experience in the 13 years I played in this game. We got to hunt together. The lone wolf dies alone. I mean, we got to hunt together. We are a pack, and we got to hunt together. And if we ain't hunting together, and then they lost their quarterback early. And whenever you lose your quarterback, that always puts a little more added pressure on the defense to go out and perform well. So they got a lot of things going on right now. But, hey, when they get I know one thing. Sacks and turnovers come in bunches. Whenever you get them going, you better keep them going.
Talking once again to Warren Sapp, Hall of Famer, Super Bowl champ. And, you know, Warren, I'm sure, I know you spent some time with the Raiders at the end of your career, but you're a Buck through and through. And watching this team, and we talked about it yesterday, Tom Brady, and just what he has done so far and defying all logic at 44 years old. And it just feels like, Warren, that Bruce Arians has just said, go get it. You know, you got all these weapons, go after it. Do you think Tom Brady right now, from what you've seen early on in this season, has that fire in his eye to just prove everybody wrong and to go after MVP? Because I thought about putting in a little something on him 8-1 to win MVP this year.
That's going to be hard because the NFL that we play now is such a wide open game, and Bruce and Tom are going to be smart about how they go up and down and attack people because, I mean, he's no spring chicken. He knows that. And the weapons he has around him are going to allow him to do some things that he's never done before. And the thing that Bruce really did was allow him to coach and to get into it and to be with the players and, you know, have an input into it. That's the one thing he didn't have with Belichick. Whenever you have something new like that, that energizes you. That takes you to a whole new level because now the game ain't just me showing up to work doing what I do. It's now I actually have some input in it. And when you got input, ain't nothing like that, man. That's Aaron Rodgers.
I was just about to transition to that. I was like, Sapp, what can Green Bay learn from how Bruce Arians has handled the Bucs organization since he got there?
Oh, King, let's break this down. There was a 3-time MVP Super Bowl quarterback before Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. And what happened to him? Joe Montana won 4 Super Bowls in San Francisco. And what happened to him? Peyton Manning was everything. You didn't even know who the backup was in Indianapolis. Peyton Manning played so much in Indianapolis, but he got shipped out of there. I won Defensive Player of the Year. Took the Bucs to the NFC Championship game. We put a stranglehold with you as a rookie quarterback. Put a stranglehold on them, and they took the catch from us with Bert Emanuel and sent us a ladder. And you know who the Bucs picked with the 13th pick the next year in the draft? And McFarlane.
Yeah.
You know what I told Anthony McFarlane? I ain't not going to go in Rich McKay's office and yell at Rich McKay, what you doing? You done picked my backup. Get me out of here. I looked at McFarlane. I said, son, you can play beside me, but you'll never play in front of me. So, I know for me to go get that boss. Boss got to keep his job. He over here trying to pick a player. I'm going to show him that you got one right here. Don't worry about this. I put him beside me. He never going in front of me. No.
Hey, Warren, Sal, real quick. We got 1 minute left. Deshaun Watson, just because the Texans are on Thursday Night Football, do you expect him to play this year? If not, when do you expect Deshaun Watson to play again in this league?
2022. Next year. They're gonna find some kind of way to ship him and let everything calm down, and then find a team, and we'll watch Houdini at quarterback again, because it's a damn shame that we're watching David Mills. I don't even know who this is. Who the hell is Bill? Are you kidding me, right? Man, I remember we had, who was that boy from San Francisco that showed up on the scene? Mullins or something like that?
Nick Mullins. He's now, I don't even know where, Philadelphia maybe right now. Hey, Warren, enjoy the game this weekend, and we really appreciate you jumping on with us.
Thank you. And anytime, y'all got the number, hit me up. And don't have no potential spam on that.
There he is, Hall of Famer and Sean King's former teammate, Warren Sapp. We got a touchdown. Tell you everything you need to know about Thursday Night Football right after this here on The Nightcap.
It's The Nightcap on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Make this football season your best sports betting season ever. Start your VSiN free trial today to get full access to our sports betting experts, including 24/7 video streaming, daily best bet emails, betting splits with the money and ticket percentages on every game, plus full access to VSiN.com data and analysis. You get everything VSiN has to offer for only $22 a month. Sign up, VSiN.com/subscribe. How about that? A little Hall of Famer for you, man. On a Thursday night. I take all the credit for booking that guest. 100%. All the credit.
But, see,
you know, we're a team, so that's why we come together. And I,
if you listen closely, he said the lone wolf starves. Yeah. We got to hunt as a pack. See, me and you, we're together. So if you get the guest, it's the Nightcap got the guest.
That's
if
right.
I get the guest, it's the Nightcap got the guest.
Well, that was great. Warren Sapp, awesome having him on. Some great insight and some really good thoughts. Hearing you talk about quarterbacks is, you know, I just sit back and like, you know, it's a different level. And then hearing Warren Sapp talk about defensive players and what he sees, I think that the commoner like myself, you look at Aaron Donald, like that guy's a beast. And then every player you hear talk about, former, current, just talk about, but hear him talk about Max Crosby was interesting too. I mean, he has been playing at an incredible level, but to hear him talk about Max Crosby was something.
Hulk Hogan. I mean, Max makes the uniform look good, right? So if you're going to put like a Raider somewhere on a billboard, it probably needs to be Max.
Hear that, Las Vegas? 14-6. Let's get you updated on Thursday Night Football. The Panthers went right down the field. And how about this? Joe Brady being Joe Brady, Tommy Tremble, end around for a touchdown on first and goal from the 7, makes it 14-6. So right now, you got it at 8.
Yes.
I got the, I have a teaser starting with the Panthers. I got that at 1.5. So right now, you're at a push situation.
Are you serious?
What's that?
You're not going to give your Notre Dame alum any love?
You know, just.
I mean, they are super high on Tommy Tremble there.
He is a.
Yeah, they are super high on him.
When he left, I mean, I get it. Look, go get your money, man. And he was a
They have big plans for
a
him.
A Mack truck.
Yes.
So what? You know what? I want to go back because the fact that you are with this team, mm-hmm. you know, during OTAs, Tommy Tremble is, his hands need to get better, but he's a great athlete, and he is as a good friend of mine, Doc Walker, who is on the Washington football team and, you know, the Hogs and all that, and has been on the DC. He just yells violence when people hit hard. I mean, that's what Tommy Tremble is. He loves hitting dudes.
Yeah, and you know,
he's got some athleticism.
He's super athletic. He's a big kid for a young kid. You know, of course, he was a deer in the headlights then. You know, a lot of words in those plays, a lot of plays with a lot of words, you know, trying to get figure out how to line up, where to line up, when to motion, how far to motion, when to stop. Pass protection is always changing. Mm-hmm. But when he knew what he was doing, you can see the talent. You know, they have two veteran tight ends there in front of him, so it's not like, you know, he's going to get exposed until he really knows what he's doing. But they think very highly of him. And I think his future is big there in Carolina.
Yeah, he is, you know, when he opted to go pro, I think some eyebrows were like, I don't know. But then you listen to the evaluators, you know, the Dane Bruglers and folk and people like that. And they're like, this dude has got incredible talent. He's a rising star. He's young and he likes to hit.
Let me pose a question to you. Or actually, it's just an opinion.
Yeah.
I'm shocked more guys don't declare for the draft early. Simply because with the slotted pay scale, mm-hmm. it's almost like the NBA now. You're better off just going ahead and getting in and getting towards that second contract because of the slotting, you know, for the draft now. Back when the NFL draft was a free-for-all and it was based on escalation from the previous year, I get it. But now, I mean, you already know what you're going to get.
And if you're, and I'll say this, as we head to the end of the third quarter, 14-6, Panthers have the ball leading 14-6. If you're wondering, Tommy Tremble to score a touchdown was 14-1 today. So you're.
I'm surprised he made the list.
I'm surprised it was not even longer than that.
It would have taken me a long time to get to Tommy Tremble.
And he ran it in. Right. I mean, there's no odds on that one. But to answer your question, I agree. I mean, the only position, I would say there's two. I think quarterback for one, mm-hmm. unless you're Trevor Lawrence, gotta leave, right? If you're an obvious go, but I think a guy like Davis Mills, now he's starting in the NFL and he's getting paid a whole hell of a lot of money, but could he have taken his game to the next level and potentially been the number one
overall
pick? But
he's not really making a lot of money for the position that he plays.
And he could have.
Yeah.
Stayed and gone up and been a top 10.
So the way the rookie contracts work, unless you're a first round pick, all your money's going to be in your signing bonus, and then you're really making the minimum salary. Right. You know, so he's a third round pick. Of course, right. You know, that's great money. You're a seventh round pick, you know, but relative to the elite quarterbacks who are making
and then you think
30 a year, 33, 40 a year, it's peanuts.
And you think about the maturation of quarterbacks, another year in college, you're the guy, you get a full season, he only played 13 games, and he could pretend, and a year that it feels like it's wide open, right? I talked about Malik Willis from Liberty, Spencer Rattler, Matt Corral, it's a question mark. He came out in a draft where you pretty much knew five dudes were going in the first round.
Yeah.
So,
but again, he had played so sparingly in college. Right. What was the benefit to come back? So to me,
I guess the benefit to come back was a full season of tape, unless I don't know. I would think a full season of tape, and then he could go in the first round.
If obviously he had good information,
right? And he ended up going to the third round,
right? Which is great. Right. So someone was telling him the right information that there are enough teams that think highly enough of you that if you come out, yeah, you won't go in the first round because of these guys, but you'll be a second to fourth round pick. And to me, that's worth it because going back to Stanford, I mean, what are they going to finish? Middle of the pack in the Pac-12? You know, he's not close to accomplishing any singular records at the university. Like, to me, you come back for legacy.
But could he have, with the quarterbacks that are out there, could he have jumped all of them and been the top quarterback in this class?
In this upcoming draft.
Right.
You just don't know. He had done nothing in college yet that says he was going to go throw for 40 touchdowns and 6 picks.
Sure.
You know, and again,
and some guys, and, look,
and again, because I want to be clear on this point too. You come back to college when you have a draftable grade, in my opinion, for legacy or championships. If you have a, okay, let's just say you're a quarterback, you're a three-year starter. People are saying if you leave, you'll be a second to fourth round pick. But if you stay, you're probably going the first round. But you're also 1,800 yards from being the all-time passing leader at the university. You're 11 touchdown pass from being the all-time passing touchdown guy at the university. To me, you go back for those reasons because that's legacy. Like, you may not appreciate it now, but once you get 40, 41, 42, and you go back to that university and they're putting you into their ring of honor, and they say Tim Murray, the all-time assist leader at Woodabacon High in East Rutherford, Maryland. We ain't even going to give you East Rutherford, New Jersey. East Rutherford, Maryland.
Just making up places.
I'm just saying, yeah. But like that matters on the back end. So if you can, if you have those milestones within reach, I think you go back. If you don't, leave.
And a lot of people just want to get out of college and make a lot of money.
Yeah,
and
for good players, college is fun. Yeah, especially now with the NILs.
I'm very curious about the NIL moving forward. 14 to 6, by the way, inside the 10-yard line.
I was trying to see, did I have any eligibility left?
Well, you like J.R. Smith?
Hey, I know we can get a King Cake sponsorship or something.
Easy. Yeah.
Jeez.
I mean, we could figure out a way to get you on a basketball team somewhere.
I probably need to golf.
Yeah, like J.R. Smith.
Yeah, probably.
Down at NCAA.
Yeah, I probably have to golf or something.
That's all right.
Yeah.
We can make that happen.
We get some sponsorships.
I couldn't do anything. What am I going to do?
Security, you know.
Security.
Yeah, the cafeteria needs someone to guard the door.
Look, I was thinking maybe I could get on a team somewhere. But
make sure no one gets in without their ID.
I guess we could go the security route. That's cool. man.
You set yourself up for that.
Right to the heart. Ah! 14-6. Tommy Tremble, 30-yard reception. Look at this.
Hey, I'm telling
you. Coming out party for Tommy Tremble, baby.
And watch the brilliance of Matt Rhule. What better way to get a young kid who hasn't really been involved the first 2 weeks locked back in moving forward? You give him a reverse, you throw him a ball, and all of a sudden he's like, okay, let me pay a little more attention. Let me get in the playbook a little more because Matt knows that he can help them. You know, he can create some sets with Arnold, you know, where they have two dynamic tight ends that can push the ball vertically down the field. You know, when you have McCaffrey, hopefully he'll be back soon. That presents problems for defenses. You know, Matt Rhule is one of the underrated coaches in that league. I mean, he is an outstanding head coach.
And good news for you. Knocking on the doorstep here, 14-6.
Uh-oh, DJ Moore's limping.
Oh, boy. Whew. Man. Christian McCaffrey out. J.C. Horn ruled out for the game. But the Panthers knocking on the doorstep. They're inside the 5-yard line. 4th and 1, they call in timeout. So we'll get you updated on that. Also, the good guests keep on coming. Chris Felica, the Bear, will join us next. Talk some college football right here on The Nightcap.
This is The Nightcap on VSIN, the Sports Betting Network.
Indeed helps you hire great people fast. Indeed delivers 4 times more hires than all other job sites combined. That's according to Talent Nest. Visit Indeed.com/credit. It is The Nightcap here on VSiN alongside former Tulane Green Wave great 10th in the Heisman Trophy in 1998 and also backer of the Carolina Panthers, -8. So an important field goal.
Shout out to Matt Rhule for doing the right thing. I'm sitting here yelling at the TV like they're about to go for it on 4th and 1. Like, come on, Matt. You got to know what the spread is, bro. Good teams win. Great teams win and cover.
Just great teams cover because we're hoping Marshall can just cover. We got the 7.5. That hook, we'll see. I think Marshall has missed a chippy of a field goal. So App State driving here down in Boone. But it's all right. Up by 2, we're okay. App State can score. Go Mountaineers. You can win this game. Just let Marshall cover. All right, let's stick with the college theme and bring in Chris Felica.
The Bear.
You will see him in Chicago. Maybe I'll be doing jumping jacks in the background. Hey, look at me.
Chris, just ignore him. Just ignore him, Chris.
I'll be there. But the Bear, you'll see him on College Game Day. Listen to him each and every week with Stanford Steve, our guy, Stanford Steve and the Bear, the podcast. Chris, always a pleasure. Appreciate you jumping on. And let's start with the game that you'll be, I guess you won't be at. You'll just be there for College Game Day. But this is a fascinating game. And I would say a bit of an interesting line because everyone out there is like, oh, you got to take the points. You got to take the points. So I'm nervous about that as a Notre Dame fan. But now you've started to see this total plummet. I jumped on it at 47.5. It's now down to 45, and I'm not surprised by that, because this, to me, Chris, has 23-13, 23-17 written all over it.
Yeah, I think 24 points is a very reasonable number to expect the winner of this game to score. And, yeah, I don't feel comfortable taking the 6.5 with Notre Dame, and I don't feel comfortable playing the 6.5 with Wisconsin. I think both offenses have some problems. Obviously, Notre Dame's offensive line has suffered a ton of injuries, and they're really struggling to run the football right now. And if you give Jimmy Leonard and that Wisconsin defense an extra week to kind of break you down and find some weaknesses up there, that's a problem. And then on the other side as well, you have a Wisconsin team that is one of the worst teams in the country in the red zone this year. Only two teams in the country have a worse red zone touchdown percentage, scoring percentage, rather, than the Badgers do right now. So I'm with you. It may not be the best number at 45.5 right now, but I still think that's a good number. I can very easily see this somewhere in the 24-20 type range, just like you thought.
Hey, Chris, sometimes you have to close your eyes, bite down, and just believe in Jack. Notre Dame money line, that's the play.
I hope so. Speak it into existence, Sean. I've got Bear. I always hear about his traveling on his pod with Stanford Steve, because he flies to College Game Day, then he's flying with Herbie to wherever they're going that night. This week it'll be Norman, then he's flying back. So I've got a Bear-like travel itinerary, flying after the show Friday to Chicago, watching the game, turning around, flying home. So speak it into existence, Sean.
Right.
I need that
it's
win.
It's going to happen, Bear. Make sure you say it Saturday, Notre Dame money line.
He's not going to do that.
I will say
I might throw a little in there on that. You don't want to hear about my travel today with the nice 3.5 hour delay. And it was fun. I'm literally just getting to the hotel in Chicago right now.
I can only imagine. I'll say this, though. Big picture, it looks like the year of the underdog. It looks like this is David. You look at all the normal Goliaths. Clemson's already lost. Ohio State's already lost. Teams that normally dominate. You guys are going to Norman. Oklahoma, even though they're undefeated, they don't look dominant. What's the reasoning behind that, Chris? And what underdogs do you think are going to ultimately be able to make it into the college football playoff when this is all said and done?
I think in Oklahoma's sake, I think there are a couple of things there. First, I think, is people were putting, just assuming Spencer Rattler was going to be just like Kyler Murray and just like Baker Mayfield and just like Jalen Hurts, and he's just not. I think that's the first thing. The second thing is their offensive line is not up to snuff what it's been the last couple of years. And I think the other thing is it kind of dates back to the end of last year, where I think people were expecting the Oklahoma team that beat that Florida JV team that Dan Mullen and the Gators threw out there in the bowl game. So I think everybody had a little bit of a higher expectation on Oklahoma just because of that recency bias. So they're a team that has actually lost a ton of games as north of a 2-touchdown favorite the last couple of years. So we'll see if they get up for this one on Saturday. But if we're looking for I know they're not really an underdog right now to make the playoff, but it was someone people asked me about, if I couldn't take one of the four big teams to make the playoff, who would I take? And it would have been Oregon. Mm-hmm. And I know that 50-1 price is long gone on the Ducks, but I think now with that win over Ohio State in their back pocket, they have to rate higher in the pecking order over Ohio State, and they certainly have to rate higher in the pecking order over Clemson, with Clemson not having a marquee win. So I know they're number three or number four in the country right now, but I still think Oregon is kind of underrated and a little bit disregarded in terms of being able to make the college football playoff.
Yeah, earlier this week they were plus 190. Ohio State was plus 175. It made no sense to me. I mean, if it comes down to it, even if Oregon stubbed their toe, head-to-head, they beat them on their field without their best player. I mean, that's the thing. We always hear, Chris, about the committee, but they didn't have this player, trying to figure out ways. Oregon went there, beat them, and didn't have their best player. So there's really no way, if you're the committee, and if it's 12-1 conference champ versus 12-1 conference champ, it kind of comes down to your colleague Taylor Twellman when he says, what are we doing here? I mean, that would be a what are we doing here moment. Oregon has to get in over Ohio State.
No, they do. And not only did they not have Thibodeau, they didn't have Justin Flo either. He and Sewell are their best linebackers. So yeah, that was an awesome win by Barrio and the Ducks. And it's interesting. And Sean was saying before, like, he set it up well. Like, two of the teams from last year's playoff already have losses. Notre Dame has not looked great. Like,
no.
And then there's Alabama. So certainly it does look like we could get a couple of new teams in the playoff this year, which would be great for college football, because I think you have a lot of people out there who just want to see someone other than Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State in there in the playoff again.
Staying right there in where we're at, this is why I'm rooting for Notre Dame. Cincinnati needs Notre Dame to be undefeated.
I knew it.
Because that's their only hope, because Indiana ended up not being that good. But I brought up something yesterday on the show, and it's probably going to sound crazy, but there's a non-Power 5 team that if they go undefeated, they will have seven wins against Power 5 schools, and that is BYU. What happens if they run the table this year? Do they get in?
Well, it's interesting. With BYU, I think people, and this was something that we had to remind people of last year, like BYU is not technically a Group of Five team, so they would get one of the at-larges, if that general at-large pool, which they certainly could. We'll see if they can make it through. It's funny. I brought up a conversation this week about the Group of Five, and I'm starting to make the argument in the case that Fresno State might be the best Group of Five team. They have been much more impressive, I think, in what they've done, nearly going to Austin and beating Oregon, and then go to the Rose Bowl last week and beating a top 15 UCLA team. I think that what they've done so far resume-wise is more impressive than Cincinnati going to Indiana, and Indiana fumbling the ball away and then a terrible targeting call put IU behind the hip ball. So we'll see what happens. There's a lot of football to play, but I agree with you, Sean. UC is a massive Notre Dame fan on Saturday. Step A was beating Indiana. Step B was going to be meeting an undefeated Notre Dame team, so we'll see if they get it.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And by the way, Indiana, who I know Chris has a love-hate relationship with, Hoosiers, just be wary. My guy Bailey Zappi is going to be zipping it around the field down there the under the lights in Bowling Green. I'm just saying.
Dangerous game.
+9 seems – I already played it, so it's pretty tasty there to take those points in a sandwich spot. Penn State next week. I love me some Western Kentucky. All right, Chris, we only got a minute left, so I know you've got plays written up on ESPN.com. You'll have the big board there on Saturday. Give us your favorite play in the final minute here.
Mississippi State getting the 2.5 at home. Looks like Stigling isn't playing. I like that, but I like UTSA as well quite a bit. You look at that Memphis box score last week, a couple of non-offensive touchdowns, outgained by over 200 yards. UTSA is probably the best team in Conference USA. And I like Syracuse tomorrow, and I get that at home. Yeah. I mean, I don't think people realize that they're a top 25 team nationally in terms of, like, defensive efficiency. I'm not sure the Malik Willis one-man show is going to go up there and win by a touchdown.
What does UTSA say?
Meep, meep. Beep, beep.
Yeah, there we go. Yeah. UTSA. Love it. Love it. Hey, Chris, enjoy Chicago. I'll just be yelling your name when I get off
the plane. Ignore him, Chris.
make a big sign for me. I'll
say, he likes UTSA. There he is. Chris Felica, College Game Day, Stanford Steve, and the Bear. We got news. J.C. Horn, not great. It is the nightcap here on VSiN.